Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The Staff and Graf Podcast.
This is weird. My lock's been drilled, so I open the door and my steering wheel is missing.
And links for salad.
You know what? You're trying very hard not to get sued.
You can have all the talent in the world skating around, but if you don't have a goaltender, it does not matter.
Team Tidy Business, baby.
Some people, they give me a hard time because of my love of Florence Pugh, you know? And like my pursuit of her.
Correct.
And
I give you a hard time, yeah. Notably.
But you know what? You know, it's been years of me loving this woman and trying, you know, to get to reach the ultimate goal, which is her hand in marriage, you know.
You're right there.
And I'm going to say, Rachel, after like 5 years, basically, of more than that, really.
I think it's like 7 or 8.
7 or 8 years of loving this woman. I think I'm right there. I'm really close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
right there.
But you're also a ways away.
Okay,
we didn't record on Monday. You know, there was a lot going on behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, obviously.
Yeah, as you have all seen.
As you've all witnessed.
My dog passed away earlier this week, and Mike, as being like a good co-host but also a good friend, was like, "You're not recording the night you put your dog down." Like, that's...
Yeah, I cut it off. And I also was like, listen, all we're going to do for this episode is we're going to go on and we're going to bemoan the stuff that happened with the Leafs, and we're going to get mad, and then it could either be completely out of date in 2 or 3 days after.
Which it would have been.
Which it would have been. We can basically just take a bit off and then come in with fresh eyes, fresh perspective. Now, normally, I would say, like, if we didn't have a strict podcast schedule we have to adhere to, I would have even said we should have waited until after the management media availability tomorrow. It was supposed to be Thursday.
We planned this, and they messed it up.
Yes, the Leafs were supposed to speak on Thursday when it was just management in menacing quotes. This is going to be, so if you're not a Leafs fan, you might actually like listening to this episode too, because it's going to be a lot of yelling and complaining about the Leafs. Not yelling, but like...
And there's going to be some insider stuff, because I got clearance to say some things that I wouldn't normally be allowed to say.
Exactly. And I know a few things. I know some things too. Okay. But yeah, this is going to be an all Leafs episode, basically, because we are at an inflection point here. We are at a crossroads of this era.
I was waiting for that.
It has been. We're going into year 9. I want you to think about how different your life was, Rachel, when Austin Matthews got drafted. Like, I was a different human being than what I am now.
You want to know something that's like really morbid?
What?
The Leafs drafted Austin Matthews, and 8 days later, I lost my grandfather. That's like the level of change that and. I mean, you didn't know me.
No, I didn't
back
know
then.
You.
Like, we didn't know each other.
I didn't even know of you back then.
Exactly.
Like, I was, and my best friends that, like, I mean, you see me interact with them on Twitter, Bia, like, whatever. They will all tell you, I became a different human being that summer. And so I look back on it, and it's funny that you say that, because I'm like, okay, what was I doing when the Leafs drafted Austin Matthews? I was a totally different human being. I had not worked in the NHL yet.
No.
Like,
we were in second year university.
I was in third. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, it was fantastic. It was a dream if you were a Leafs fan. They're playing at House Money. They had this the youngest team in the league, basically. All these young kids. Matthews is better than anyone could have ever dreamed of.
Kasperi Kapanen was vibing.
Even Kasperi Kapanen scored like a double OT winner in the playoffs. You know, like
damn, yeah,
on the road. You know, like they went out and after years and years of being horrible, because you remember like they make the playoffs in 2013, shortened season by the way because of a lockout, and they were trending pretty far downwards towards the end of the year. Like there was like 50 games or something there, 48.
They
games
were Philadelphia year. Flyering it.
Exactly. I would bet my life that they missed the playoffs that year if that was an 82 game season.
100%.
But even that little like 50 game blip or whatever it was before that, there was nothing, you know, for like 9 years before that and like 9 years after that, it was crazy. Or like 4 years after that, and they make the playoffs and they finally, like they're finally good enough that they add at the deadline. They get Brian Boyle and like,
I'm going to go on record and say, I thought that was a bad idea. At the time and now.
I loved that trade. I don't care.
Oh, no, I didn't mean Brian Boyle.
No, not even just Brian Boyle, but, like, I loved that trade. I know they shouldn't have given up a second-round pick for a fourth-line center, but that was just, like, final. It was finally, like, if you're a Leafs fan, you're going, like, finally, we're like the good teams again. Like, we can buy. We can get excited. We can, like, latch on to players. We're adding. We're stocking up. And then every year since then, it got more and more disappointing. Every year since then, it was the house money year. And they go and they get Patrick Marleau, and it's all of the, you know, the bemoaning and everything. And it was good, but they blow it. They take a lead into the third period in Boston in Game 7, and they blow it.
And that never happened again.
No, and it never happened again. But that was also just the worst period maybe this team has ever played. That third period in that game.
It was
horrible. I remember watching it in London, Ontario, at Western University, with my now ex-girlfriend, and just freaking out. Like, that's how long ago it was, though. It was like, that's a lifetime ago for me.
That was, what, 2017?
2017.
Right?
The next year...
I was working in a completely different sport that year.
And then even after that, like that, even then, though,
then
that was...
that summer was
the summer that I met Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah, but even then... That was the last, I think, bit of innocent fun that this team was ever going to have, because after that was the Nylander holdout, and then they lose in the first round again. Then after that, they get Tavares. Amazing! Can't even celebrate that because it's the Mitch Marner holdout, and we'll get to that. The summer of Mitch. And I say this now that I'm like not...
We're back! Summer of Mitch 2.0!
And now that I'm like not, like, you know, not working in media full-time, I can say it again. Like, Mitch Marner owes me a summer of my life back. I was running theleafsnation.com and editor-in-leaf at the same time. And going to school that summer as well. But I was running two different Maple Leaf sites with like 20 staffers under each. And every single day, it was a Mitch Marner rumor this, Mitch Marner rumor that. And then
that was the summer we met.
Yeah.
We met in March of 2019. Yeah.
Because it was Dangle's book launch.
Oh, yeah, because I left for Germany like 2 days later.
Yeah, it was Dangle's book launch. And then... After that, COVID hits. Oh, no, after that, so they have another thing, and then Babcock turns sour,
yep.
Steps up, takes no accountability for his actions at the presser, but the Leafs keep him because he had a good game 5 in that series that they eventually lost. By the way, they had a 3-2 series lead, going home
and
for game 6 and lose on Easter Sunday, so that's proof God hates the Leafs. And then they go into next year, for some reason hanging on to Babcock. Absolute disaster start, and Marc-Andre Fleury robs Nick Batan to basically seal the deal. Babcock's getting fired. They have a bit of a dead cat bounce, but then COVID hits, the world shuts down, everyone's lives change forever, and they go into a bubble, and they play the Columbus Blue Jackets in the play-in round, a team they should have fucking annihilated.
Wiped the floor. We're talking about a team whose number one center was Boone Jenner.
Like, they should have taken the Columbus Blue Jackets and like just whipped them around like a hyena and a bunny. Like in a nature documentary. Like it should have been
two Cobb or three Cobb done.
It should have been like parents hiding their eyes, like their kids' eyes. Because
mm-hmm.
there's graphic content.
It should have been New York Rangers, Washington Capitals.
Exactly.
Instead, they fucking blow it. And then, okay, COVID is still happening. These players are still making a ton of money. And now we go into Joe Thornton, who at the time I thought was a great piece because I'm like, hey, you'll get the guys together. They'll want to win it for Joe. Turns out probably the worst signing of the era, at least from a vibes perspective, because Joe Thornton let it seep into those players' brains that it was okay to get close. And we had footage of it from, again, the documentary that you and I were forced to sit and watch for 5 straight hours. And they play the Montreal Canadiens, another team. And they have home ice advantage too. That they like,
you were at my condo.
Oh yeah, when Tavares gets decapitated on live TV to the point that like, we were going to record a podcast after that game,
and we were
and both. we just put our hands up. We're like, I can't. I feel like I just saw someone die. Like I feel like I just watched someone get hit by a car, and now I don't know what to do with
Did
the rest
that,
of my day.
Okay, so I want to pause there. Did that series break the Leafs?
Absolutely. You could
like
honestly,
the psyche.
You could honestly point to any of these series, really, and say that they broke the Leafs, blowing it, the Columbus series. Like maybe
no, but I feel
blow.
Like there's like...
But that one was like, we are up, because so, they were fighting Columbus, and that team was flawed, let's be real. Tyson Barrie, Cody Ceci.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Can you imagine a team having both those guys on their blue line at the same time? Would have been crazy. Who would have thought? But then they, like, but yeah, that was a series where, like, they were up, they had home ice advantage, everything was in their favor, and they blew it 3 straight times. And they blew
yes.
it. And it wasn't the Montreal Canadiens that beat the Leafs that series. Not even
it was
close.
The Leafs, as Sheldon said.
As Sheldon said in one of his final quotes as Leafs coach. But like that
also
was
also spot on correct.
Well yeah, but like that series, if you look at like two of the games that they could have closed out of the three, and I'm sure there's another one in the third one. But one was ended when Alex Galchenyuk, crazy, you know,
yep.
Decided to like pirouette at the blue line on the power play. And led to a breakaway that sealed the deal. And then the other one was when Travis Dermott decided to pull a spin move, an Ian Tulloch NHL 24 fucking the thing that would literally have us boot him from the PlayStation chat. And then the next year, they have Tampa home ice advantage.
They win?
No, they blow it in Game 7 at home.
Oh. Yeah, we're right. We're not there yet.
And as much as it made me want to, like, as much as it made me loathe Wes McCauley to this day, if your margins are so thin that you're like, man, we couldn't beat this team because a Justin Hall goal got called back. Okay, well, like, you need to be better.
Yeah.
And then finally the next year, they exercise their demons.
Some of them, yeah.
They finally win a playoff series, which, by the way, is the bare minimum.
They got 25% of the way there.
That is the, like, for a team, that is the bare, for a team of the aspirations of the Leafs, the team with 4 of the highest paid players in the league, a team that literally, like, we say this every year, but has to, like, commit tax fraud to stay under the cap, and has let guys like Bunting, Zach Hyman, you know, like, they will likely let Tyler Bertuzzi, like think about all the talent that has walked out of Toronto because to play those players, they get the bare minimum, and then they get fucking speedbagged in the next round by Florida, where all of their flaws are shown. Like, this is, that Florida series, I covered it all.
We
I was
there.
There.
Both of us.
Yeah, I was, you know, like boots on the ground, reporter, you know, in the trenches, Ryan Rashog style, all of it. All of their flaws. Their, you know, like the power play was terrible. The fact they can't get to the center of the ice and it.
Oh, so everything that was the case this year.
Exactly.
Awesome.
But that's where it was really laid to bear. Like it looked like they didn't want to get to the middle, and so they blow it. Keith should have been fired then. He comes back, and then this year they have a flawed team throughout the whole season. They somehow pull it together, and yet. They blow it again, and they blow it in the worst way because they go down 3-1, and they give everyone hope, and they blow it.
So I'd like to have a conversation about We're Right There, and there's 3 examples I'd like to bring up.
Okay.
That I think, first of all, 2 of them are public, the 3rd one not so much, but I'm allowed to talk about it. Mm. So We're Right There. If the Carolina Hurricanes say we're right there, objectively correct. Conference final, multiple years.
The closest thing I can see, I can remember to them ever saying something like that, and I don't know why, and the reason why, I do know why, the reason why Rod Brind'Amour didn't get more shit for it is because he's won playoff series before, and they really are kind of right there.
He's also one of the best coaches in the league.
But they got swept in the conference finals 2 years ago. And he goes, well, to me, it really wasn't even a sweep. You know, we were right there in every game. I don't view it as a sweep.
Every game was a one-goal game.
Yeah, but
and when, three were overtime, if I'm not mistaken.
But when you get swept, and then you go to the press, like, if a Toronto coach said that, they would get publicly executed. So, like, that's, but you're right. If the Carolina Hurricanes say they're right there, you get some leeway because they really are.
Yeah, or like Vegas being in multiple conference finals. We're right there.
The San Jose Sharks.
Correct.
With the San Jose Sharks of the Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau era.
Right
they
there.
Really, they were always right there.
They got with one win of the cup.
Do you think two of those, the key players on that team, ever maybe played for the Leafs and let that comfortable mentality seep into their team?
It's not great. So let's get, so Vegas is one example where when you say we're right there, if you look at how Vegas conducts themselves, they've, in their first year, they went to the cup final. They've been to multiple conference finals, and every year that they didn't win, we, like, they got ridiculed because they made massive changes, right? Nate Schmidt, Max Pacioretty, like,
Marc-Andre Fleury.
There was constant turnover, and people ridiculed them. But where I'm going with this is, even though they technically were right there was still not good enough.
Yes.
And so they said, core pieces, Marc-Andre Fleury, first player basically, in first NHL
basically
player.
The franchise.
Yeah, gone. Max Pacioretty, somebody they gave up tangible assets for.
They gave up Nick Suzuki for him.
Gone.
Yeah.
Right? They go out and they trade Mark Stone, Cody Glass, they trade for Mark Stone. They trade Cody Glass. Like, they consistently did everything in the name of not winning two playoff series, not winning three.
Winning four.
Winning the cup.
Yes.
And so Vegas takes the tact, and yeah, they get ridiculed for it, but the reality of the situation is, that is the tact that you must take in the National Hockey League to win. The second NHL example is Nathan MacKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
They went out, I believe it was like the second round, I want to say.
They did.
It was the second round.
Oh, I remember it. I'm about to.
And at this point, they'd won multiple first round series, and they'd always gone out in the second round. And Nathan MacKinnon basically snapped at the press conference. He was like, I'm fucking tired of this shit.
The quote was, I'm going into my ninth year and I haven't won shit.
Right.
This is a guy.
He also looked like a guy, like, I thought he was going to come unglued.
He looked like a crazy person. And you know what? He was right, because although he was great, he had achieved incredible regular season success. He'd probably be nominated for a Hart at that point.
He did. Pretty
sure. Yes, exactly. Like, you know, 100-point season.
He should have won more.
The look on his face and the words coming out of his mouth cemented that none of that shit mattered, because he hadn't won anything and he was going into year nine. And years of your career are precious. You never know when it's going to end.
So and Nathan MacKinnon, like, we talk about Austin Matthews being on the level of Nathan MacKinnon, and I think that is fair to say.
Yeah, he got nominated for the Lindsay right alongside him. He literally is.
Yeah, so Austin Matthews was actually asked about this at his end-of-season presser, and I will give him some credit. I didn't like the "we're right there," but what I did like was, no, I'm not taking any solace that I'm nominated for these awards, because I'm not interested in winning that. I'm interested in the cup.
Yeah.
That was probably the only takeaway from his presser that I thought was positive. But this, I'm going to take this one step further. And this is going to blow your mind.
Okay.
On Tuesday afternoon, Bayern Munich was within 7 minutes of a Champions League final.
Did you say they're right there?
So, this team, for the first time in 12 years, will not win a trophy.
It's like, horrible.
So, you win a trophy for 12 consecutive years, a minimum of one.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about the Prince of Wales Trophy. We're talking about, like, a league title or a Champions League.
I also don't know what the Prince of Wales Trophy is, but you're right. We are not talking about the Prince of Wales Trophy.
No, the Prince of Wales Trophy, like the conference trophy in the NHL.
Oh, I thought
the Princess
that was
of Wales, sorry.
or the Clarence Campbell Bowl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're not even talking about semifinals here, right? When Bayern lost out on the league trophy and it became clear that they weren't going to win, they announced that their coach was not coming back next year.
Like, during the game.
Yes. And he's continuing to coach. Yesterday, 8 minutes from beating Real Madrid, who is widely considered to be the best team in Europe. If you're 8 minutes from beating Real Madrid in a Champions League semifinal, you are right there. And you know what Manuel Neuer came out and said after they lost? He goes, "It is unacceptable to have the year that we have had. We have to do better, and this is not going to work." We're talking about a guy who has, like, a team that has won a trophy every single year, and the moment that they don't win one, all hell breaks loose. You want to talk about being right there? We're talking about a team, and I understand that it's different because in football, there isn't a salary cap per se, but you still have financial fair play regulations. There are still rules that need to be abided by. But if you want to talk about we will do what it takes to win, there is a chasmic difference between what Vegas and Nathan MacKinnon, and to a completely different standard, Bayern Munich do, versus what a lot of other teams in the NHL do, and then the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, if, I'm going to say this, if Manuel Neuer, or any Bayern Munich player for that matter, yesterday had come out and said, "Well, we're right there," they would have been dragged through the streets of Munich and pelted with tomatoes. Like, that is a totally unacceptable thing to say without a trophy. And so I look at the Leafs, I look at MacKinnon, I look at Vegas, and I look at Bayern. But if you want to just keep it to hockey, you look at MacKinnon and you look at Vegas. Do you think Bill Foley would come close to allowing any of his players to have the thought process that the Maple Leafs have? Or do you think that he would probably be more on the wavelength of a Morgan Rielly, who was the only player who said, "No, we're a ways away"?
So I'm glad you brought up Rielly, because we're going to go through a couple of the players here.
You want to start with him?
It'll be free-flowing, basically, but...
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
So, Morgan Rielly looked the saddest at the end of season availability.
He looked like he'd been crying for 2 days.
Yeah, he probably had been. But he redeemed himself in my eyes, because I'm going to be honest. Like, I know other podcasts have said this, but, like, I will say it too, and especially because I covered the team for 3 years. It's fucking bullshit that him and Mitch Marner did not speak to the media after the game. They are assistant captains, and they were both the two players back for the goal that ended their season. That is, like... There should have been a conversation after that they didn't. And this is also on Leafs PR.
And so I was going to say, you can't only lay it at their
exactly.
feet.
However, and I will say this as someone who has dealt with Leafs PR a lot, this was a nightmare season from Leafs PR. And, a lot of this is the standard that they have set, that they have struck the wrong note pretty much every single moment this season. And it's through this... Like, do they not talk to the players? Do they not do media coaching anymore? Do they not do anything? Do they just sit there and clamp down? Like, because...
So I had somebody close to this situation tell me that the moment Lou Lamoriello left the organization, this whole thing about players not actually having to be accountable... just started to explode. Yeah. Players' entourages, which I'm sure we're going to get into.
Oh, we're getting into that.
We're allowed to become more prominent. Players, and I don't have a problem with being an individual and their individuality, but I am still firmly of the belief crest on the front supersedes name on the back. And the moment Lou left, a lot of what I was told by someone who I honestly, I respect a ton and who has been in and around the Leafs organization for a very long time said to me, all of the blue and white disease that Lou eradicated immediately started to creep back in. And I'm like, well, that's concerning.
Well, there's a difference between being, I'm glad you brought that up. There's a difference between being an individual because Lou cracked, I think Lou is at the opposite end of the spectrum and that's bad. Like, he's on the bad end of the spectrum. Like his.
But role, I would rather, I guess what I'm saying, I'd rather have more accountability than no accountability.
However, like Lou with not telling anybody anything at all, like, there has to be, like sports are not black and white. You have to be, there are shades of gray, and when it comes to PR, and why I bring up PR is because did the PR team not sit the players down or talk to them, especially the guys who are going to speak? Because there's like four PR guys.
There are
four. And did they not, like, I know there are enough of them to do this. I see them do it all the time. They certainly are good at shooting dirty looks at people during scrums if they ask a question that is anything close to accountability of people, like to hold players accountable. But did they not go before Marner or Tavares or anyone?
Well, they clearly
spoke
to them because the message around Marner was pretty much the same across the board.
Well, the message around Marner was, let's cut him off after 2 minutes, basically.
No, what I'm saying,
like, the message, like, all of the other players who got asked about Mitch
gave
the same sob story, so it was clear that PR spoke to them.
However, what I was wondering is, how do you not go to them? How do you not go to them and go, hey, guys, here are some keywords we want to avoid. We're right there. We're close. You know, or...
Lessons.
Which
or run it back. Those are some keywords that we're going to try to avoid.
Yeah,
and they did. And
God
also,
bless Morgan Rielly for being the only one that
didn't do that. And on top of that, too,
and Max Domi actually.
Yeah, and Max Domi did as well, who I think will be coming back.
He will.
But there was a mandate, I believe, from above. But it was parroted by PR. And this year, I was a writer up until basically December. It was there was a war on the media. From Leafs PR.
Absolutely.
You ask anyone on that beat.
It was worse than when Lamorello was here.
Yes. You ask anyone past or present, it was a war on the media from PR. So they already were making people's jobs difficult, already trying to hide things. And I think trying to paper over some cracks that were showing. And on top of that, they also failed in just suddenly, as the playoffs started, shutting down any injury information that came out. Because in doing that, when you had the run of Matthews, when you had the of missing games, and you had the run of Nylander missing games, and when you had Joseph Woll miss a game, you then, all you did by playing coy was leading to speculation that then was a distraction for everyone around your team, except for maybe William Nylander because he doesn't give a shit what anyone says about him. But with Nylander...
I don't think Austin
does anyways, or either.
I don't think he does either. There's one player that definitely does. However, I work in an office. People know that I used to cover the Leafs. People know that I like the Leafs. I know a lot about them. And
you're the insider man of your office.
There was like four different people that came up to me and asked me if Nylander got suspended for game one because he wasn't playing.
This is an utterly ridiculous concept.
And these are and you know, like, people just like, those are coworker questions, I like to call, you know, like people that,
yeah,
that
just, they could have just said upper body injury.
All they could have said was he's banged up. Or he tweaks something. You don't have to tell the truth. You just say that, it goes away. Matthews, no injury information at all. One day he's
the guy
there.
Could have been dead. Like,
one day he's there. The next day, the next games, the season defining games, he's not. All they say is illness. And so that led into people believing and crapping on Matthews on social media and in person of, this guy's missing era defining games for the sniffles. That's the sentiment that it created. And then Joseph Woll goes down minutes before the game. And they address by going, he's out. They wait until literally warm-ups. Ilya Samsonov said he knew he was starting 2 p.m. the day before.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
They wait until warm-ups. People, you know how I found, you know, like, well, A, I found out. I got tipped off before.
Yeah.
You know how a lot of people found out on Twitter about this? A, it was Paul Bissonnette. But also B, is someone was at the game and went up behind the Leafs bench and looked at the sticks and realized that only Jones and Samsonov's sticks were laid out right before warmups. That's how they knew the confirmation. And so it is a nightmare, and that's why we had quotes like John Tavares coming out and saying, we're right there.
Hello?
I realize I'm speaking a lot. I don't want to take away from you.
No, but seriously.
John Tavares.
You're the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You're making $11 million.
Regardless of salary, you are the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. If Jacob Trouba, let's just say they're
Jacob Trouba said that. They clone Jacob Trouba and get the clone Jacob Trouba to headshot the real Jacob Trouba.
The Rangers are up 2-0 right now. If they lose 4 straight to Carolina and Jacob Trouba comes out and says, we're right there, the people in New York would lose it.
And what round are they in, Rachel?
Dos.
Yeah, exactly. Now, here's the thing. I really like John Tavares. I like him as a person. He's always great to deal with on the media side.
Yeah.
He does phenomenal things in the community. He is accessible.
A consummate professional.
He is a consummate professional of a human being. He's a good person. And I think even though he definitely is on the downswing, I still think he's a good hockey player.
Yes.
However, John Tavares doesn't know what it's like to be right there. He's won two playoff series his entire life, one before the Leafs, one with the Leafs. So to say you're right there literally is like me saying I'm right there when it comes to marrying Florence Pugh.
From?
Who?
Joel Edmondson. Because he's actually been there.
He's won a cup. He would know what it's like to be there.
Are we right there? The other guy I really wish we'd heard from, because I think he's going to be a key piece of the roster moving forward, is Jake McCabe. Utterly shocked, because that's never a guy...
Jake McCabe would never say anything like that.
Jake McCabe is never a guy that's going to dodge accountability. Like, if Leafs PR went to him and said, Jake, you got to speak today, he would have been like, yep, for sure.
But he had done that. We spoke to Jake McCabe a lot this season. Because he's someone, and through tough stretches,
a good quote.
He makes himself available. And obviously, because his play declined, he wasn't playing. Someone who he didn't speak. But someone who would always step in front of the mics, always take heat off people. Because sometimes, even just stepping in front of the mic takes heat away from a cowardly superstar who doesn't want to speak. Mark Giordano.
100%.
Nothing was good enough for Mark Giordano.
And that's why I give, I understand the whole... Riley Marner not speaking, and I completely agree with you. I thought that that was a misstep on PR's part, because let's face it, if PR says you're speaking, you're speaking.
I mean, you can say no.
No, that's no. If PR,
with this core,
you think?
I absolutely.
Oh God, then that's even worse. Then they're worse at their jobs than I even thought. I was going to give them.
I have heard that there have been instances of that.
Okay, what I will say about that is...
Incredible, that's credible hearing, too.
If you get told by PR that you need to speak and you don't, that letter comes off your sweater that night. I'm not even going to get into my personal opinions on all of that, but... I'm going to give one of those players the benefit of the doubt because he steps in front of the microphone on a near daily basis and for 11 years has constantly stepped in front of the microphone. And when he does step in front of the microphone, it is thoughtful.
Yeah.
And it is honest and it is not a bunch of nonsense and it's not
never,
inflammatory.
It's never combative. Never.
Ever. And generally speaking with this particular player... You can tell by the look on his face that he had been up all night reliving this goal.
This player is Morgan Riley, by the way, just in case there's any subtlety
any
around that. Yeah.
But I think this team needs not a talent like Nathan MacKinnon, but an attitude like Nathan MacKinnon. Like a Leon Draisaitl goes psycho mode. When the Oilers don't win. Like, remember earlier this season where that famous picture of his head in his hands and he, brings his hands down from his eyes and his face is beat red because he wants to, beat somebody up.
Yeah.
But he and Connor consistently in front of the media at every turn. And I look at this and I say, with John Tavares, you can go out in front of the media every day. Do you think for one second... that those words would have passed the lips of Dion Phaneuf or Matt Sundin? Like, we can think what we want about Dion Phaneuf. There is no chance he would have said that. Like, zero.
And if you're basing yourself off of Dion Phaneuf,
it's like, not
if
great.
That's your bar, it's not great. Now,
do you think those words would come out of the mouth of Wendell Clark or Doug Gilmore? No. There's no chance.
Like,
no chance.
Not even, like, I think some, like, you are paid, like, some of the greatest players in the league.
$1 zillion.
You are paid in a way that makes you among the highest paid players in the game's history. So I need you to start, you need to start comparing yourselves to that. Like, and as much as I don't like him as a person now, but, like, Mark Messier, you think he'd ever say something like that?
Oh, Jesus Christ, no way.
If a teammate of Mark Messier said that, he'd kill him.
Oh, like, mid-press conference, you just see a hand coming over the top.
Exactly. You would see the last thing you would see is the shine off a bald head, and then you'd be dead.
The other guy,
he was on TSN the other day, Chris Pronger.
Chris Pronger would kill you.
If Chris Pronger, like, and now it's infamous because John Tavares is talking and you just hear laughing in the background. If Chris Pronger's in that dressing room and hears that, he, like, stops the press conference, goes and deals with it, and comes back. Because in what scenario, and I understand, oh, we're going to have fun with our coworkers and whatever. You?
No.
Not acceptable.
If you lose a giant business deal that is going to hammer your bottom line and likely create layoffs, which it did, your coach just got fired.
Yep.
Your boss just got fired. Are you laughing in the office? No.
It's
not.
Just, yeah.
And so we can talk a little bit about William Nylander. Like, you know, he
showed up.
And you know what? Like, William Nylander could have, like, if there was anyone who could have come out there, and no one should have this opinion, but if there's anyone who could have come out there and say, yeah, we're right there, and have it be somewhat okay, it being William Nylander, because that guy has shown up for the playoffs every single year he's ever been into it. He scored the last three goals of the Leafs season. He single-handedly won them the game that kept them alive and then gave them a 1-0 lead with, like, a period and 2 minutes left or something.
No. In game seven, it was in the third period with eight
minutes left. Oh, yeah, sorry, with 8 minutes left that they then gave up 80 seconds later.
So here's what I wanted to... I'm seeing a lot of people dump on Morgan. And...
He
didn't have a good series.
He had a terrible series.
Yeah, he wasn't good enough. What I will say is this is also the first playoff series he hasn't been the Leafs' best player in. So when you're the Leafs' best player for seven straight years in the playoffs and your teammates around you don't perform, you get a little bit of slack there.
Yes.
Because
a little bit.
A little bit. Like, next year, if he's not good, you're getting called out. Right? But when you are good for years in a row, like, he was by far the Leafs' best player in the playoffs
Tampa,
last year.
In the Tampa series.
Like,
And in Florida, yeah.
And in the Florida series, and in the Tampa series before that, and in the Boston series before that. Like, he's been by far the Leafs' best playoff performer for over the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Consistently.
Him and Nylander together, yeah.
So, if he has a bad series, or if Nylander has a bad series, you get some slack. Because you have a track record of being a playoff performer.
It's just like you build up some leeway.
Exactly. You build up some slack. I'm going to cut you some slack.
Right?
Yeah, like,
but if somebody... Here's a great example for you. If I walked in to a candy store today.
Okay.
And accidentally...
Accidentally
was like, oh, I'm going to, like, try this. And then, like, for whatever reason got, like, jumbled up and ended up walking out with some candy without paying for it. Like, first time, and then I come back, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, like, totally didn't mean to do that, here's it all back, like, whatever. The owner of the store is probably gonna be like, oh, like, this person's never done that, like, it's fine. If I have four charges of burglary,
mm-hmm.
and then I go into the same candy store and do that, probably not the same situation.
Exactly. Like, it's all about, this is a what have you done for me lately league. However, there is some leeway that you can build for yourself by showing up and doing your job. Riley and Neely have done that. The person who hasn't is Mitch Marner, and it's time to have the conversation about Mitch Marner.
We're going to have a chat?
Where do you want to start?
Where?
Also, I want to start this by saying his London Knights teammate had probably my favorite quote of the day.
Which was?
Max Domi, they asked him, like, oh, you had such a regular, great regular season. And then they start asking the playoff question, and Max Domi cuts him off and goes, the regular season is irrelevant.
It is.
And I was like, that's a man who has a dad who he's had an earful from over the last 48 hours.
That's true. The regular season?
Like, you know, Ty Domi has been, him and Max have been having some conversations.
The regular season, obviously, is about seeding and everything. You want to be able to get a good seed, home ice advantage.
End of list.
But the regular season, the main goal in the regular season is to create good habits. To create winning habits. To get in a...
Be a good pro.
Exactly. But to develop a process, to develop a routine, a procedure that will allow for success.
What did we talk about Tampa for years?
Exactly. The Bruins are good at doing that. Even though they blew it last year.
Dallas is excellent.
But like in the regular season, obviously you don't want to like, you don't want to just glide through it. But a big thing you do in the regular season is you establish good winning habits so that when the games do matter, you have that foundation to bring it in. And the Leafs, and it was shown in the 2021 Amazon documentary. Sheldon Keefe sits everyone down. And he goes, hey guys, we're winning a lot. We're killing teams because it's the Canadian division. So we're playing the same other six teams every single night. And we're fucking killing these guys.
But this shit won't work in the playoffs.
Exactly. We are playing an unsustainable type of hockey.
He recognized in 2021.
I think Sheldon Keefe has always recognized this. And I think he's never gotten the buy-in. And that's a problem for him.
But this is also where I'm going to let you finish, and I'm going exactly right back there.
And the whole core, it's the core in that room, and Joe Thornton. Joe Thornton, giant beard, he's literally got his feet up, and he goes, nah, I think we're fine. And that was the moment, that right there, like we saw it, it was on film. It was one of the, and again, like PR did this, one of the very few candid moments that were allowed in that documentary. But it nuked it. Like that was the moment where everything just crumbled. With that core.
So and I want to talk about that for a second.
Okay. All right.
So, first of all, I think the only person who has taken an appropriate and maybe an overextended amount of accountability in this is Sheldon Keefe.
Absolutely.
Because the reality of the situation is we clearly know he identified that that was an issue for the core in 2021. What year is it right now?
It's 2024.
Okay. So, I have had personal experience with Sheldon. Mm-hmm. Like, straight up, I just have. I've also worked in the National Hockey League, and this is how it works. I'm going to break it down super simple. Coach identifies a problem. Coach sits down with the coaching staff and says, this is a problem. We got to figure out, like, schemes or what we need to change to fix it. And they do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then that gets disseminated to the players.
Right.
There is an expectation, as far as I am concerned, when you are making the money. If you are making more than $7 million and a coach says, we must change X, you must change X for us to be successful, it is not a negotiation. We are not looking for your input. You do it. So for Sheldon Keefe to identify in 2021, which is 3 years ago, that this was going to be a problem, and he was spot on in his analysis, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul McLean was too, saying, like, there's demons here.
But Paul McLean said they've got demons under their bed. They got demons in their cars. Like, he saw it.
Right? So they had clearly identified the problem. My educated, informed guess is that discussion, obviously we didn't see all of it, but that discussion was, this is what we think needs to happen. You guys go away and talk about it. Because I think at some point, when you have players of that talent, you let them try and figure it out. After they couldn't get it done in 2021, definitely what happened was Sheldon Keefe said, this is how we need to play. And I can almost promise you with a bullet that they just said, no, we're not going to do that. And at that point, it ain't on Sheldon Keefe. And that is why I am in the camp of, next time Sheldon Keefe is a head coach, he's going to have success.
Absolutely.
And that the thing that needs to change wasn't just Sheldon Keefe.
You can see.
Because it doesn't matter if Scotty Bowman tells you that you need to do this. If you're not, if your roster isn't going to do it, those guys needn't be on the roster. That's the problem, right?
You could be the greatest chef in the world, Rachel. But if I told you to go and whip me up a dish and you said no, I'm going home hungry.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, and I'd be looked at as a pretty bad, you know, kitchen supervisor, you know, like, and we've seen, we know there's like documented moments of
evidence
of players refusing to do what this coach has said. Mitch Marner refused to change, not just refused to come off the top power play.
Oh my God, don't even get me started on that. Yeah.
Refused to switch spots on the power play. So this guy, like, let's talk about this because I genuinely don't care. This guy is not cut out for this market. And I'm sure there are photos of him, you know, like doing great things in charity, and that's awesome.
Yeah, this is not an attack on Mitch Marner, the human being.
Some in the of community. It is. No,
yeah,
in the community.
In the community. But this guy fucking sucks. Like it is no longer tenable to have this person in this market. James Myrtle came out on the Leaf report and was like, "Hey, we've you know, like the Mitch Marner's entourage has gone around and harassed media members." Cool. We're some of those media members. So, we are who he was talking about. You know, like Mitch Marner, like his everything around him, from his father and his burner account on Twitter.
Oh yeah, the burner account,
which is very open to like even
his cousins DMing people, his brother-in-law, his brother who has since deleted his Instagram account. Interestingly enough, here's the one thing I'm gonna say about the entourage. Mm-hmm. I spoke to 4 people with knowledge of the Lou Lamorello time, the Dubas time, and now this year, in terms of how that stuff happened. Every single one of them said the same thing.
What?
This did not happen until Lou left.
Absolutely.
Because if you remember, when all of this, when stuff started percolating, when Lou was here, he threatened to ban Mitch Marner's father from the Air Canada Center.
Mm-hmm.
He literally was like, "I don't care. You will not be allowed."
Yeah.
"I don't care." And you know what? Good on him. Because we don't have to like Lou Lamorello's haircut rule or shaving rule, but I think everybody with a sane brain can say, like, okay, here's a great example for you. I'm having a very public dispute with the Vancouver Canucks.
Mm.
You think my mom is calling Jim Rutherford?
No.
Can guarantee you, promise you 1,000%, has never happened.
If the, like, here's another thing,
like,
too.
You are insane.
It's unacceptable behavior.
And one thing I also want to point out, too. So, yeah, so his entourage is harassing people, including us.
Yeah.
And it's happened to me, like, well, us, multiple times.
It has happened to people who are my friends, who have literal anonymous Twitter accounts, but happen to have open DMs. They'll get in the DMs. And here's the thing, is whether or not Mitch is telling them to do it, because I don't necessarily believe he is irrelevant,
yeah.
Because he knows it's happening.
Yeah.
And he has the power.
That's what I was gonna say.
To say stop.
So the Dangle podcast had a great conversation about this.
Oh, I encourage everyone to listen.
Everyone
to
needs
that.
To listen to. I mean, the one that they did, I think it was either today or yesterday, is great. But the one they did like on Monday after all this crap was really good. They had a good conversation because Adam had a show with Alan Walsh. They had Alan Walsh on the show, and Steve would not stop talking about the sword. It was crazy.
Because it was so funny.
It was hilarious. But the thing is, and the thing we have to realize, because everyone thought, Alan's going rogue, man, it's crazy. If Marc-Andre Fleury did not want that up, that photo would not have gone up. Or if Alan posted that and went rogue, Marc-Andre Fleury did not want that to keep up. If that wasn't his sentiment, he would have told Alan to delete it. That picture remains up. Mitch Marner, so I see a lot of people excusing Mitch Marner of blame.
Can't do it.
And pointing it on, well, he's just a kid who's in over his head, or he's surrounded himself with bad people. This guy is 27 years old. He's a year younger than us, I believe.
Yes. He turned 27 over the weekend.
We're adults. We're if I had a friend that went around to everyone and went, fuck you. And they went, hey, man.
On your behalf.
If they knew that this guy is Mike Stevens' friend and he went around and he just went, fuck you, to everyone. That would look bad on me. Or, let's say, we're a podcast duo, right? I went out to everyone in the hockey world and I just went, hey, fuck you, to this person. Or I went around and I just started kicking people in the nuts.
Like, dude, what?
They go to you and they go, hey, man.
Rein him in.
What the hell is your guys going around kicking people in the nuts? And, like, that would look bad on you. And you would talk to me and you go, hey, stop kicking people in the nuts.
And we've had conversations where people have reached out to either one
of us. And be like, hey.
About something.
And we've had and it's obviously, and we're friends.
We have frank conversations. Be like, hey, cut the shit. You know? If someone's going a bit overboard on something, you're able to rein them in. Mitch Marner's a grown person. He's responsible for his image, and he's responsible for his reputation, and he's responsible for how people act, people in his circle act, because it's on his behalf. If you're getting paid that much money, if you're cashing, you know, intact insurance
Red Bull checks,
DoorDash checks, all that stuff. Like, if you're, like, there was a point in time, and he wisely pared it back after, I think it was his fifth playoff disappointment in a row, but there was a time where, like, you could not escape Mitch Marner's face. There was booster juice everywhere. I remember
billboards.
I remember Tic Tac Tomar once sent me a Snapchat, I think 3 years ago, where he was waiting by a GO bus station, like, because he in the middle of nowhere, and he looks and there's a field. In the field, there's just this wood stand up of Mitch Marner going, like, drink booster juice. And he goes, why is he in the middle of a field? I can't escape this guy.
Well,
Mike, he's in the middle of a field because he's looked upon as a god.
Okay, you know what? That was a crazy quote, and another reason why I thought.
But the thing is he's spot on.
No, he is. That's...
He's totally correct.
There's a lot of things to crap on Mitch Marner for here. There's a lot of things he's done wrong.
Completely correct.
This is on PR. How do you not go to them and say, hey, talking points. Let's do the number one thing we want to hammer in here is humility and accountability.
And that we were not good enough.
Yes. Even if you don't want to believe it, you need to have humility and you need to have contrition.
Oh,
and so when someone asks you what it's like to play in Toronto, you go, I love it. It's amazing. We have the best fans in the world.
And we need to do a better job of performing for them.
You don't go. And again, this is not something that you can really hammer, because what he said was true. And I get the sentiment. But after losing Rachel, they lost over and 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 over again.
8 times, guys.
Like that sounds comically crazy. That's once for every time they lost. So they lost over and 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 over again. You don't go out and you say, we're gods.
Even if it's true.
We're looked upon as the deities. You know, like, we are worshipped like the Incas worshipped the sun.
That is where, I'm not going to lie to you, when I saw that, and then I saw, like, the Nathan MacKinnon clip, and then I saw the Manuel Neuer clip, and I was like, I understand, because what Mitch Marner said objectively was correct.
Yes, but it shouldn't have been said at all.
You need to read the room and the temperature of the fan base, because... If William Nylander had said that, and he was like, well, I don't really pay attention, 100% believable. Remember the famous line about Darcy Tucker?
Yeah, Darcy Tucker knew where the commas were. Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner knows, like, what the font is. So they will likely run it back, I think. Like, as much as he should be gone, I think they will run it back again.
I want to have a chat about something then.
Before, I don't want to, hold on, save that for a sec, because I don't want to leave Marner for...
No, it's about Marner.
Okay, but he has reached the end in this city. I want to contextualize this, because I think it's very important to sort of hammer in. Mitch Marner has been given everything he has ever wanted and more in Toronto.
He's been given more than he's deserved.
He has been given far more money than he deserves, or that he deserved at the time, especially.
Even now.
He was given a concession on term that a lot of players don't give their team. But he was given that. Only 6 years. We want to lock in for 8. Literally every other star player in the world has done that. But no, we'll give you 6. He is being given every amenity by the Leafs you could possibly imagine. Any luxury thing or whatever you can possibly imagine. His family's been given full access.
His dad is able to have a sports memorabilia business that he profits because Mitch Marner plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And also,
his entourage is being allowed to go around and blackball and harass fans and media alike. And he's being written off for it. He's been given a clean slate. No, he's never faced it.
I would loved for somebody to have asked that in the press.
Never been given accountability for it. Never been, like, Garrett Sparks went on a Facebook group, and even though he was standing up for someone who was bullying someone with special needs, said, "I'll fucking kill you," basically, and got suspended.
Yeah.
Matthew signs a big extension. Everyone wants to ride that high. We have the best goal scorer in a draft and develop talent, best goal scorer in the league. We signed him another 5 years, another half decade. No, has to ruin that by his agent coming out and doing that and changing the whole conversation and polluting the water. The Leafs signed John Tavares, the biggest free agent of the salary cap era, leaves money on the table to go home and play in Toronto after the narrative that so many people don't want to play in Toronto because of the pressure. He chooses to go home.
The next day.
The next day, he starts his contract holdout that goes into training camp. No one can celebrate the Tavares thing because Mitch has to get his money. Then, ever since then, and before that,
too. I'll point something out about Darren Ferris, too.
What?
He cost Taylor Hall almost $50 million.
Yes.
Because he wanted to do this bitch-ass thing and hold out for all this money when Colorado had a fantastic offer for Taylor Hall on the table and Darren Ferris wanted more money. And where did Taylor end up? Buffalo, then Boston, and now Chicago. So frankly, I'm just going to come out and say it. I think Darren Ferris is shit at his job.
Look, he's gotten his clients a lot of money, but he has sewered their reputations and sewered their long-term futures as they do it.
Do you hear about this with Pat Brisson or Pat Morris?
You don't hear about this. Even Alan Walsh, who tweets out swords and stuff, he doesn't do this to his clients.
No, Alan Walsh would be the first person to tell Mitch's dad, zip. You're not allowed. And this is the thing. So when I brought up Darren Ferris because I've heard from a few people that Marner is considering an agent switch. And I kind of chuckled at it because Ferris has obviously represented him since his London days.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, this whole charade started. Mitch Marner was slated to be the first overall pick in the OHL priority selection. And he wanted to play. Well, Paul wanted him to play in London. So what did Darren Ferris do?
What?
He told every organization that if they drafted him, Mitch is going the NCAA route, which obviously
was never
going to happen. Mitch Marner was drafted 20th overall. Erroneous.
Yeah.
Completely ridiculous. So here's where I land on this. Do I think an agent change is good? I do, because Mitch Marner is an elite hockey player, and he needs an elite agent. Darren Ferris is not named J.P. Barry, Pat Brisson, Donnie Mahin, or Pat Morris. Or Judd Moldover, who's Wasserman.
Or Alan Walsh, man. He's in that
top
tier.
No,
yeah,
I'm talking about
the big agencies.
Yeah, yeah. CAA, Newport, who have multiple sports, here, there, and everywhere. Darren Ferris notably also represents Logan Mailloux. So we're not talking about the cream of the crop here, is what I'm sort of getting at. Do you think, just on vibes.
Okay.
If Paul Marner called up Pat Brisson or Pat Morris, so Newport or CAA, and said, "You need to go speak to the Toronto Star about Austin Matthews signing," or, you need to tell the Leafs, this is my new favorite one, you need to tell the Leafs that if they don't offer Mitch $13 million on July 1st, that we're going to throw a temper tantrum. What do you think Pat Brisson would say?
No.
He would probably go, sit down, shut up, don't call me, lose my number.
Yeah.
I don't want to fucking hear from you.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear from you. You think Elias Pettersson's dad calls Pat Brisson?
You know, he would go, who is this? And then hang up the phone.
Who do you think you're talking to? Like,
there's another thing, too, is like,
you need a serious agent, Mitch.
So,
and it's for his benefit. The thing is like, we would not, because Mitch himself hasn't actually ever said anything that's like, yo, what the hell is wrong with you? Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But by proxy, his entourage, his agent, his father, people don't like Mitch. And I'm like, I feel there is a part of me that feels bad for the guy. But at the same time, you gotta rein that in.
You gotta be, like, I don't
want. And you gotta say, Dad, like, I'm going to switch agents. I'm either getting Alan Walsh, Judd Moldover, Pat Brisson, Pat Morris, whomever. You are no longer involved. I am an adult.
Yeah.
It's done now.
You know what he's got to do?
Like, you don't need a fucking permission form.
Mitch Marner's got to be on his, like, Troy Bolton arc. He's got to go to his dad and be like, this is your dream, Dad. Not mine.
You raised me to make my own decisions.
Like,
now
I'm my own man. You need to let me make my own decisions. And, okay, another thing, too.
I watched High School Musical last week.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I have 3 hour-and-a-half to 2 hour long High School Musical review podcast I recorded with my friend. Where we interviewed him. Exactly. Like, it's amazing. But,
that's all I'm saying about Mitch is, like, I get that it's not solely him,
but at some point, you gotta take accountability. You gotta be an adult. Like,
yeah.
I was gonna say be a man, but, like, no. Be an adult. Fucking, like, if you're, like, you can't have your dad in your ear being like, do this, do that. Oh, we're gonna sue her. You gotta be like, shut up, Dad. You gotta be able to say that.
So how do you think
this gets taken? Because I think this is a distinct possibility here.
What?
The Leafs make Mitch Marner says, you're not trading me. That could happen. 100%. Mm-hmm. But the Leafs can also say, that's fine. We're also not re-signing you. You are not going to be a Toronto Maple Leaf after June 30th, 2025. Will not happen. So you cannot waive and you can play out your last year and that's fine. But we are not offering you a contract extension. You will not play here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What does Paul Marner say?
Loses temper. And he probably goes like, all right, fine, then trade me to LA. Or trade me to a big market, trade me to New York. Trade me to a team that doesn't want him, basically. The thing is, too...
And by the way, this notion that Mitch Marner is going to be traded for Pierre-Luc Dubois,
no.
I would rather have Mitch Marner. 1 billion percent.
I'd rather kill myself.
Like, obviously neither.
Yeah.
But...
If I had to choose between those two, I would choose killing myself. But...
I would choose... Yeah, if Mike had to choose, he would choose cyanide.
I'd choose the bullet. And so, anyway, like, another thing, too, that I want to talk about before we can loop back into this is... So Marner's been given everything he's ever wanted. Money, fame, endorsements, concessions, like rules that don't apply to everyone else would apply to him. Access to family members, any sort of perk or amenity you can possibly want from, being a player on the Toronto.
Yeah, like his wife is like head of the Wags.
But that's heightened even more. Because he's Mitch Marner. They've catered to him. They've laid out the red carpet for him. And
the moment Lou Lamoriello left.
And he has never paid them back for it, by the way. But another thing, too, is that Mitch Marner, this season particularly, but like a lot of the time in seasons past, too, became a lot more combative with the media. And that's always the downfalls when the athlete goes, it's me versus the media. You know?
Yeah.
He would put his foot in his mouth a lot, but then there'd be, he comes back from injury and he goes... Yeah, well, a lot of you people were talking about it. You guys were guessing how I actually hurt myself. It's ridiculous. Or, how many times did Mitch Marner say, blocking out the noise? I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there. Maybe you guys don't believe in us, but we believe. Like, it was always...
Dude, you're not blocking out the noise. Your headphones are turned up to 11.
And let me tell you, I was a media member. I may be a media member again, but I was a media member for 3 years, talking to Tomorrow a lot. Do you have any idea how many softball questions we would give him? How many softball questions other people would give him? They would, like, for example, I want to give a...
I'm so happy that you brought that up, because it reminded me of something.
I want to give an example. So I believe in 2021, 22, this is before we could even go in the dressing room again, because of COVID. It was like the hybrid year, where like they would bring guys out. There was like a fun inside joke that Mitch Marner was running the Leafs Twitter, TikTok account.
Right.
That was a fun, because he's supposed to be this Energizer Bunny, kind of like, you know, kid. We've seen him dab and the stuff like that. He was supposed to be, like, that's what he
oh,
was.
Oh, yeah.
And so he was a quirky, random kid. So there was a joke, you know, that was developed by the fan base. And I believe even, like, the actual social media people, like, leaned into as well, that Mitch was running the TikTok account. And I remember there was one scrum in particular where you give him a softball question. It's supposed to make everyone do the polite chuckle. They go, ha, ha, ha. Oh, what a great interaction. That could be a fun viral clip of him showing off his funny side. And he would just be like, no, I'm all locked in. It's only hockey.
It's very not.
But, like, you would alley it for him, and you would swat it the other way.
Yeah, he'd LeBron James, like, block.
Even he talks about the media and the market is too big for him and everything. Like, it's too hard.
If the market is too big for you, stop doing your endorsements. Yeah. Stop being out in the public. Like, shut the hell up. William Nylander is in one commercial, and it wasn't until people realized he took the subway.
Yes.
If you want to block out the noise like Willie does, mm-hmm. get off of social media. Yeah. Stop doing endorsements. Stop all of that.
But he was also like, the media has tried to help him out. And they've tried to give him softball questions. They tried to give him questions that allow him to show his fun side and endear himself. And he has rejected it for this weird me against the world type thing that then when you lose, he turns into pouting.
So there is I have been told by more than enough people now over the last number of years.
Yeah.
That the softball questions piss the other players off because they know that he does not have to answer the same kind of questions that they do.
You know why? Because when Mitch Marner steps to the podium, all the PR members, they tense. Like they're more locked in when Mitch Marner's up there because they're more they know he's more sensitive and they're ready to like basically curtail him. There's a reason why his availability was like 2 or 3 minutes shorter than everyone else's.
And 4 seconds.
There's a reason why it was like 2 or 3 minutes shorter than everyone else's.
Yeah.
Because they treat him with kid gloves. Everyone in the world, everyone around Mitchell Marner has protected him, wrapped him in bubble wrap for his entire life. The only person who really hasn't is his dad, who is borderline, like who we have videos of being like an absolute psycho to him. And so if there's ever any sympathy I have for Mitch Marner,
Mitch
it's the fact
Marner's
that he had to
dad
do it.
Is the case study for hockey parents. Like, yes. You know how all hockey parents have to take that respect in sport now? Mitch Marner's dad is like the cause of that.
Yeah. No, I grew up in the GTHL. There's the legend of Paul Marner. And
McLeod's father.
Yeah. But like specifically, like if Paul Marner was at a rink, if he was at a Canland Sports or whatever, like you knew it.
Oh, you knew.
You could either hear it or people were whispering, going, that's Paul Marner. He's crazy.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And so, like...
The video of him, like, threatening Mitch was
wild. Better start
Mitch
fucking
like,
skating, Mitch, I swear to, like... But, like,
Mitch
that's,
like,
gone.
Six.
Mitch is, like, 6 years old. Like, and the drive
poor
home.
Kid.
What are you going to tell your mom? Oh, we didn't, you know, that we played and all that? No, it's you lost. No, like
that I actually feel bad because he's a child.
That's horrible.
You damaged your kid.
That's what I have sympathy for. And I would guarantee you that Paul's the guy telling Mitch about every time someone says a bad thing about him. Paul will probably tell Mitch that us two dumbasses record a bad podcast.
I gotta check to see if I still have the text. I saw a screenshot one day of a conversation that was happening, and basically the context of the conversation was the fact that Mitch Marner's dad was sending Mitch mean tweets
about
Mitch.
Yeah.
I have a rule in my family post-Vancouver, where, like, I have family members on Twitter, and they see mean tweets about me. Do not send them to me. They might piss you off, and you might get angry. I don't want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have enough followers that I can tweak my notifications, so unless I follow you, I don't see it. Which means I don't care, because you are not relevant.
Yeah, it's...
Mitch Marner needs to tell his dad, I don't want to see it.
Fuck off. Like,
end.
And so...
Because genuinely, that's not good for anyone's mental health.
And you know what? I'm also going to bring up something, too, here, is that we have, like, he has soured, him and his camp have soured his reputation so much in the market. Now people are starting to look back and find things that he might not want to be found out. Maybe about his grandmother.
Yeah.
And her, and basically that the family blacklisting her.
Not great.
And her begging Mitch on Twitter to basically like acknowledge her because she's his grandmother and he, like stuff like that. But like we've reached, and I know that's crazy, but like we've reached that point now. And I know they will likely bring him back, but I just don't think they can. Because we've reached that. How do you prop him up in front of another microphone after all of this stuff has happened and after these things are starting to happen?
There's again, a non-zero chance he gets booed at the home opener.
I don't think it's... I think there's a likely chance he does. People, like, he's he had the opportunity to be had the most beloved Leaf of all time.
Had he come out on Monday morning,
mm-hmm.
if he would have said, like... performance XYZ, if he would have said 2 points in 7 games is not good enough, I love this team and I want to be here, but I have to be better.
Yeah.
Do you know how far
that would have gone?
That would have gone. He would have had a rope a season long.
That just would have papered over so much stuff, rightly or wrongly, but that would have earned him so much. Instead, PR left him out to die. And
so let's talk about why he was a Leaf this year.
Okay, let's talk about that.
I'm just gonna say it.
Go ahead.
Brendan Shanahan should be losing his job. 100%. At some point, yes, you came in and you restored respect to the franchise. You brought Dave Keon back into the fold. All of those things, fantastic.
Logo redesign. You made them like the sponsorship powerhouse. You made them like
the most valuable franchise.
Yeah, but you made them like a sponsor, like a corporate sponsor hub on par with like major North. Like you made the Leafs the class of the league from a business perspective, and that's great.
Right. To allow this to go on is unacceptable to the point where, and this is where it gets it for me. Last year at this time, there was a power struggle.
Yes.
Because Kyle wanted to trade a member of the core. It is irrelevant who.
But it was Mitch.
I think there were other considerations as well. He wanted to trade a member of the core.
Yeah.
And that is the relevant stipulation here. And this is... I'm about to blow your mind.
Great.
When Brendan Shanahan took the job in Toronto, did you know that he never actually moved here? He's lived in New York the whole time. So, there were multiple situations, and I know this because I've worked in the league. Not because somebody told me this.
You worked for the Leafs when Shanahan was there, too.
Correct. Yeah. I have a picture with him.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this when I was there. But as I started to work for other teams and form relationships in other organizations. You want to know something? Here's how it goes. Kyle Dubas... GM. If Kyle wants to make a trade, he has to take it to Brendan. Brendan has to take it to the board. Here's the problem with that process, Mike. Brendan Shanahan wasn't always available. So, there were multiple times where teams were trying to make a trade with the Leafs, and the Leafs were unable and lost out because that trade was then made to another team. Because Brendan Shanahan didn't pick up the phone. So it got to an inflection point last year where Kyle wanted to make a deal and couldn't reach Shanahan. So what did Kyle do? He went to the board himself. that's where the power play issues started. Not the 5-on-4 power play. The play for power in the organization. So Kyle said, if I'm going to stay, I want the ability to make decisions and go to and take them to the board myself. And Brendan said no. Frankly, I can understand where Brendan is coming from, but this is where shit between Dubas and Shanahan broke down, is because there were things that Kyle wanted to do that had, and he wanted to respect the chain of command, even though it is very clear that this was a bad idea. Because, I mean, frankly, being a president, I've worked in an organization that had a president and a president of hockey operations. You need to separate those two, because Brendan Shanahan cannot be going from a meeting with the hockey operations department discussing trades to a meeting with the ticketing department and the marketing department.
Yeah.
Right? So you look at how it's structured. Bradtree Living, if he's going to have success, has to report directly to the board, because there cannot be a situation where you have a trade. I'm not going to get into what trade it was, but I'm just going to go ahead and say I can't.
Okay.
It was an earthquake trade that never happened.
Was it the Hagel
Flurry? No. Okay. No, it was bigger.
Wow.
It was bigger.
Hey, Rachel, by the way, when we're promoting the podcast, this is the social clip, by the
way.
Okay. Just a heads up.
There was a trade.
Yeah.
That was massive. It would have shook the fabric of the organization and potentially the fabric of the league, honestly. It was that big. And Brendan Shanahan was nowhere to... He was MIA. And the trade never happened.
Did it happen somewhere else, or did it just die?
It has never happened.
Okay.
That was when Kyle said, fuck it, I'm going to the board. And that started the issues between Shanahan and Dubas. And the board chose Shanahan. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to say right now, had the board chosen Dubas, we are not sitting here today. Because one of those core four is gone, whether it was Nylander or Marner, because both were on the table.
Mm-hmm.
We are not sitting here because Sheldon Keefe would have been gone last year. And one of those two also would have been gone because Kyle understood that it was time. And Brendan Shanahan said no. That is why we are where we are. So if we want to talk about accountability, it starts with the man who has the title of president. Because if you're president of an organization...
You're also, like, you work in sports, so your business hours are, like, 12 hours, 15 hours long. Your business hours are basically 24/7.
I got called in Italy while I worked for the Vancouver Canucks to discuss a contract. I was on the Amalfi Coast at sea, but I happen to have cell service. God, I wish I didn't.
And you're expected to pick up.
And I was expected to pick up the phone.
And if I'm expected and to you pick
were,
up the phone?
Yeah, I'm saying you are not the president of hockey operations.
Not even close.
Yeah. So it's, and Brendan Shanahan will get up there with Keith Pelley and Bradtree Living tomorrow on Friday. So the day you're listening to this, they will sit down and they will talk about how we want to win. We haven't done enough. We are committed to moving forward.
You're committed. The only guy that gets leeway there,
or actually, Keith Pelley gets leeway.
Yeah, but Bradtree Living, because he's been there here for like
less than a year.
Yeah, and he was also thrown in a really kind of lose-lose situation, stapled to a core that the previous guy wanted to get rid of.
Told when he came in, he was not allowed to trade.
Exactly. Yeah,
those players.
Sky high expectations. You're also coming in right after a very public power struggle that's got, so you'll always be compared to this guy. And you're not even allowed to sit at the table when they make their first round pick because you're coming in so late. You don't have any say over the draft.
So I
want to know how much say I want Bradtree Living to have over the draft at all, say that, but it's unfair. So
let's just let Wes Clark do Wes Clark things. Exactly. Because he reached on Easton Cowan, and boy howdy, does that look absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
I want to address a couple of things with you before we go.
Okay.
There are three names
mm-hmm.
I would look out for should Mitch Marner be traded.
Okay. What are you pegging the percentage for Mitch Marner getting traded?
50-50.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's like 30-70 from what I've heard.
I think it's 50-50 based on the teams involved.
Okay.
One of these players is going to cause you to have a stroke, so I'm going to leave him for last. UC Soros.
They need goaltending.
Nick Hague.
No, it better be Nick Hague plus.
Yeah, but like, yeah.
That's a proper defenseman.
It's a very good defenseman.
Like, he's immediately one of Toronto's best defensemen. Probably their second best defenseman.
It better be Nick Hague plus. That's yeah. all I'm saying, yeah.
And Seth Jones.
Well, yeah, because he's
an enormous right-handed defenseman.
Enormous right-handed defenseman, and they have comparable contracts. I understand why they get linked together.
Right.
That's not going to happen, but I understand.
So here we go. Now we're going to start down the path of Bradtree Living and, funny enough, a man I worked with in Vancouver, Derek Clancy. Okay. These men like to build their teams from the blue line out. And you can say what you want about Bradtree Living in Calgary.
Oh, his blue line's fucking rocked, dude. They were so good. That guy
knows how to build a blue line.
Dude.
He fucking knows.
He found a way, and I know it was like a lot of the coach's system, but he hired that coach to make Eric Goodbranson a very good NHL defenseman.
He got Eric Goodbranson a $16 million contract.
He's responsible for giving Eric Goodbranson $16 million.
Basically. So if there is one thing Bradtree Living is extraordinarily good at, it is building a blue line. And we took Monday off, and I spent a lot of time talking to a lot of people. If Bradtree Living gets his way, the Toronto Maple Leafs blue line going into next season will have the following bodies on it. Morgan Rielly, mm-hmm. Jake McCabe. Mm-hmm. One of Nick Hague or Seth Jones.
Okay.
Brett Pesce.
Okay.
And one of Nikita Zadorov or Chris Tanev. Now.
We love both. Can we get both?
I think we can agree. Yeah. That a blue line of Morgan Rielly, Jake McCabe, Brett Pesce, and
Nick Hague,
or even if they don't make the Marner trade and they just do Zadorov or Tanev, is a significant upgrade over what we just watched.
With the cap going up,
Brett Pesce wants about $5 million. In my opinion, I take that with a bullet.
Yeah. Make him the new TJ Brody.
Like.
Better.
Like, yeah.
Brett, you want $5 million?
Hell yeah, man.
Here you go.
Come on over.
Nikita Zadorov, not so much.
Not $5 million, but like, I want.
Three and a half?
I want Nikita Zadorov on this team.
Right, but if he's like, I want 8 years at five and a half.
Oh, you go
like,
obviously.
You can go somewhere else.
Obviously, it's insane, but we'll give you like 3 times 3.5.
Yeah.
Like, even
five times 3.5.
Yeah, like literally, I would go 5 times 3.5. Come on over. Chris Tanev, obviously, there's age restrictions there. I would give Chris Tanev a third year. I don't care.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, like, but you get
but
those.
But Brett Pesce is the key there.
Yeah.
That's the big one.
And that changes a lot. And I was going to say.
Defense pairing of Morgan Rielly and Brett Pesce makes me feel
a lot better. Than Morgan Rielly and Ilya Lyubushkin, who, to be fair, had a phenomenal series.
Also not Brett Pesce.
And he's someone who I think comes back.
Fucking kill me.
No, but like he had a good series. Like he.
No, but if Ilya Lyubushkin is who the Leafs are bringing back, it's because
they're not
improving.
It's not just Ilya Lyubushkin. Like, they'll go and get guys, but like I think they'll re-sign him. He likes it here. They like him. They acquired him twice under two different regimes. Like,
does that not scream Brendan Shanahan to you?
It does, but it's all like I wonder why that player too. It always.
But anyways, Bradtree Living has clearly identified from all accounts that the blue line is a problem. And I think you and I can sit here and agree his analysis, completely correct.
Bradtree Living was very open about how much he wanted to improve the blue line. To the media. So B, I was at training camp last year where like there's two sessions going on. So there's music blaring. Bradtree Living comes up, stands next to me. He's on the phone talking pretty loudly.
Mm-hmm.
I hear the words defenseman quite a lot.
And Derek Clancy. So
here's
some insight for you.
But like
I worked with Derek Clancy.
That was how unafraid he was of letting everyone know he wanted to improve. Is he like he's around media members going like, yeah, I want a defenseman basically on the phone. Like it's, you know,
Derek Clancy is, if you think Bradtree Living likes defenseman, Derek Clancy is the chief of the we need good defensemen parade.
Yeah.
He is, like, leading the charge in that.
Now remind everyone who Derek Clancy is.
I worked with Derek Clancy in Vancouver. He was Jim Rutherford's assistant GM. And then they brought in Patrick Alvin, and they promoted Ryan Johnson because he's the GM of Abbotsford. Mm-hmm. So you don't need five assistant GMs.
Yeah.
So he kind of moved, and he had a pre-existing relationship with Bradtree Living. And so Derek came to Toronto. Yeah, he was only in Vancouver for... He was in Vancouver for 2 months longer than me. Like,
yeah.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
So I look at this, and... I say, if Mitch Marner's traded, one, I know for a fact he likes Chicago, and I know for a fact that him and his wife like Nashville. Immediately, I'm like, okay, there are players on that roster that would be of interest, and Barry Trotz has also been on record saying, I want difference makers. Okay, here we go. Vegas is completely unafraid to do everything, and Mitch, you want to go make like $11 million in a tax-free state?
Go ahead. There you go. They would have to move quite a bit of bodies out to make
that. Yeah, I'm not going to get into why I think that trade would work because it involves speculating on another big player on their roster, and I don't think that that's the right thing to do right now out of respect for him.
Yeah.
I do think that there's a scenario where that works, though. But it's very clear that the Toronto Maple Leafs management has a stated goal of we need to balance the roster, and we're going to do that by investing in the blue line, which I think is the appropriate approach to the situation. So immediately that tells me that for whatever you think of the Matthew Tkachuk trade or Johnny Gaudreau or whatever, Rasmus Anderson is a fantastic defenseman.
Chris Tanev.
Mackenzie Weegar. Like, that gets talked
Noah
about.
Noah Hanifin.
As the Jonathan Huberdeau trade. Mackenzie Weegar came back in that trade and is a key piece. He was in the Norris conversation last
now,
year.
And don't forget
Noah Hanifin, Dougie Hamilton at one point, because remember, that was the original trade, right? Bradtree Living knows how to evaluate defensemen. And so I think for as much as everyone dumps on him for the Matthew Tkachuk trade, getting something over nothing, important. Mackenzie Weegar is the best piece in that trade.
Obviously. Other than Matthew Tkachuk.
No, coming back, yeah.
But that guy knows how to identify good blue liners. And so I think, inevitably, when the Leafs make changes on the blue line this summer, Bradtree Living deserves a level of trust because he has demonstrated he knows how to build a blue line. You can say what you want about the forward core.
Yeah.
But he knows how to build a blue line.
I mean, the only reason why I think fans won't give him credit is because he signed John Klingberg. That was his big move.
Yeah.
And that didn't work. And he should have known.
But he correctly evaluated that the Leafs needed more offense from the blue line. So he made the correct evaluation. Yeah. But obviously, like, a flight basically ended John Klingberg's career.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So I think I look at the process. His process was good there.
Yeah.
So I think the process that the Leafs are going to go through this summer is going to be an interesting one. But I think everyone needs to sort of take a breath and sort of allow Tree Living staff to do what they do as it pertains to the blue line, because he's shown he can do it.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's pretty much it, let's say. So, look, tomorrow or today when you're listening to this, Shanahan, Keith Pelly, Bradtree Living, they'll sit down, they give you a bunch of cliches, they'll say they're committed to winning, that they want to build winning habits, that, you know, like, we're not satisfied, we want to get further, all that, and it'll be great. But really, in reality, it won't change until Brent Shanahan goes away. And I think that's essentially the takeaway I want you to be left with.
I really hope Keith Pelly reads the room, because Brendan Shanahan's entering the last year of his contract. If he comes out tomorrow and says, we've signed Brendan Shanahan to an extension,
I think
not a good idea.
There's no way they announce that at tomorrow's press. Tomorrow's press conference is damage control.
Yeah.
And there's no way the guy who's been there for a decade and has overseen this damage is getting a contract extension. What this likely will be is the year that Brendan Shanahan himself extended Randy Carlyle so he could oversee how the operation, how the organization operated, and then make his judgment, because Kiepele just got here. Like, he got here, like, right before the playoffs started.
Which is crazy, because Bradtree Living got here last year, and he had to evaluate. Now Kiepele's there, and he got to evaluate. Like, at some point, I wish, and, like, I love him. At some point, I wish Larry Tannenbaum would be like, all of you, out.
Yeah, but he's not, Larry Tannenbaum's not staying.
But that's the thing, is, like, I wish he could do that, because you can tell he's not happy.
Yeah, definitely.
Very obviously.
And so, yeah, it's like, they will give you a bunch of stuff, but basically at the end of the day, nothing will change. If Brandon Shanahan's still here, nothing will change without big, like, invasive surgery to this roster.
Like, open heart surgery. Yeah. Not, we're repairing a tendon in your wrist.
No, like, no, they're just putting a band-aid on. Like, they fired Sheldon Keefe, which I think was the right move. He's a great person.
Yeah. He'll have a job in September.
Yes, and I also want to say, like, covering Sheldon Keefe on the Marlies beat was my first job in media. I covered him from the AHL into the NHL. We almost graduated together.
And he won.
And he won in the AHL, that's for sure. But he also, like, he is a good person. He was always kind, informative, patient with me as a dumbass kid trying to hone my craft. He's a very good human being. And I wish him absolutely nothing but the best in his next role. He's going to be great.
I'm going to be cheering for him, honestly. Like, he took me under his wing a little bit. Like, even when I didn't get the full-time job in Toronto and I had started, when New Jersey had reached out, I called Sheldon. And I was like, hey, I need some advice. And then when I called him to tell him I got the job, he was so happy. And then, like, the stuff that went down. Then when I got hired in Vancouver, you know who I got an email from?
Sheldon Keefe.
Sheldon fucking Keefe.
Remember you telling me about that. Yeah,
right?
Like, it's,
we're talking about a guy. Person.
I think...
It was time.
But the one thing I'm going to say about Toronto as a whole, not a place for a rookie head coach.
Definitely not.
At all.
Yeah.
He got thrown in the fire. And I think he did a hell of a job being thrown in the fire. He's got the fifth highest winning percentage. Yeah. Like...
It's also like, Keefe is not... Like, Keefe was known for being a hard ass. And then he came in and was told to be the good cop. And I think it kind of had him stray from certain aspects of what he, you know, of what made him a good coach.
So we're going to finish with this.
Yeah.
Who's the next coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Craig Berube.
Okay.
It's going to, yeah. I know you've brought up a name that is now circulating out there. It won't happen.
I think it is most likely to be Craig Berube.
Yeah.
Going to say that it's going to be Craig Berube.
Yeah.
I think it is most likely. I also think... There are two places I could see Sheldon Keefe ending up.
Is one of them Pittsburgh?
No.
Yeah. So one's New Jersey.
Yep.
The other one's San Jose?
Nope.
I think he'd be great in San Jose. What's the other one?
Seattle.
Oh, that'd be great. He finally gets to coach Jared McCann.
Oh my God.
How great would that be?
I think Seattle's a really good fit for him.
I think it is. You know, I also think that San Jose would be a great fit for him.
Agreed. But I also think that should be David Carl's spot.
Yeah. I mean, it won't be, but...
It should be, but it won't be.
Yeah, so anyway, hope you enjoyed this. We went for an hour and a half, an hour longer than we normally try to aim for, but whatever. Yeah, and just what I will say is don't be sucked in by the propaganda tomorrow. Nothing will change without big, big changes here, and Fire and Sheldon Keefe is not a big change. It's the lowest possible hanging fruit that you can have, so don't be sucked in. And you're a Leafs fan. One last thing I want to end on is, you're a Leafs fan, and you're pissed right now. There are going to be people that are going to tell you, or even tomorrow, the management and the franchise itself will tell you that you're not allowed to feel that way. Or you shouldn't be feeling that way. You're allowed to feel that way. You have every right to feel that
way. You should feel that way. They should feel that way.
Don't ever, ever think that you are not allowed to feel pissed at this team right now. Is you pay your hard-earned money to support them, and they have never come through for you. So, on that note, we will be back on Monday to talk about other teams that exist, other more successful teams that exist in this league.
And other more non-successful teams that exist.
Subscribe to us on YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. Subscribe, any podcatcher, we're on there. And also, leave us a review, and donate to Jumpstart, our charity of choice. Jumpstart helps economically disadvantaged kids play team sports, which is a cause that's very near and dear to Rachel and I's hearts. All the links and everything for donating will be in the description of this episode if you're able to do that. And yeah, we will see you next week.
Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.